Anais, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much for having me, Jan.
So this is the 50th year of Earth Day in April in the United States, something perhaps to both recognize and mourn in terms of the climate crisis becoming even more daunting by the day. Let's talk a little bit about where you see in our first minute or two.
In our first minute or two, right.
The last 50 years, the high points and the low points. And then we'll talk about 350 PDX and the commitments of that organization locally and nationally, and how some of the themes of the climate justice movement are in the film we'll be seeing tonight.
Okay. Great. Well, first of all, I'm not 50 years old, so there's some early history that I was not part of, obviously. But and that I mentioned that partly to be silly, but partly because this is...
You've grown up in a world.
Exactly. I've grown up in a world where this has been, you know, the world has been changing in such profound ways throughout my entire lifetime, and yet for a lot of it, I was not aware of it as a young person growing up. And in the 80s, I think my perception was of Earth Day as a fairly mild, sort of nice kind of holiday.
Like going to the park for a picnic.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a good thing to do, always. But I think that was partly just misperception on my part, because I think really as I've learned more and become more active in this work, there's been a side of the celebration of Earth Day that is a little bit of greenwashing, of sort of making it seem like it's very easy to solve these problems through individual actions.
And companies across the board now have icons that nod to that.
Right.
Healthy, clean energy.
Exactly.
Clean versus dirty. No one wants to be dirty. Even our president is really big on clean.
That's right. All that clean coal.
Yeah.
Which doesn't exist in any form. But there's always been this much more action-directed side to it. The first kind of precursor Earth Day was in response to an oil spill off the coast of California. And so we are still sadly dealing with oil spills, dealing with the constant degradation of the environment, dealing with the warming of the planet from the fossil fuel industry's actions. And I think now we're seeing more and more of that collective action really become the focus of Earth Day. I mean, right now, at this moment here in Portland, yesterday there was an action taken led by Extinction Rebellion, which is a group that people probably have seen a lot in the news the last week. They're a relatively new group.
Very active in the UK.
They started in the UK, and they basically took London and held the city for, I think, 4 or 5 days, really demand, and their main demand is just tell the truth. Just tell the truth of how serious this crisis is.
And the strategy of civil disobedience or civil resistance, some people prefer that term, is to interrupt business as usual.
To interrupt business as usual. And so in their case, part of it is also that disobedience is willing arrest, saying, you know, we are willing to get arrested. You can't dissuade us from taking a stand on this just because of that. So just to bring it back locally, Extinction Rebellion took the lead on organizing an event here on the tracks that lead to the Zenith facility, export facility, which is in Northwest Portland. They have been quietly expanding the shipping of tar sands oil out of the Port of Portland. This is one of the dirtiest, most destructive fossil fuels on the planet, and they've been expanding the amount of oil shipped out of Portland. We don't want any of that. It goes against the spirit of a ban on new fossil fuel infrastructure that the city is implementing. But because of old permits, they're still legally allowed to do it. So people are saying we need to stop this. So they led planting a garden on the tracks and declared that space a green space for the people of Portland, and they're going to ask City Council to back up what they have already declared.
So that's a story to continue.
That's
to
a
follow.
Story happening right now. Yeah.
And these in the film that will be at the event tonight, a benefit for the film Necessity, Oil, Water, and Climate Resistance, that I also been involved in as part of that team. and it's a benefit for the film and for 350 PDX. And that film features a local struggle against the tar sands oil pipeline lines in Minnesota, yes, and how that their local struggle is connected with a larger network, not only network of pipelines, but it, but the film features the network of activism. And this is a terminal for oil, but also a terminal for resistance here,
yeah,
that
yeah,
connects with their the struggle people will see in the film.
I do think that's a really important point to bring up, how it is so important that people take local action and find where they can effectively intervene and put pressure on the fossil fuel industry. And at the same time, those local actions have to be strategic and kind of integrated into that larger network. And so, you know, part of why Zenith has been expanding is because the pipelines have not, numerous pipelines have not been successful in going forward, right? So we become the outlet. And if we don't stop this, then we're kind of not playing our part, right?
In this network of resistance.
In this network of resistance,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's like a fire with everybody along the line with the bucket, passing the buckets of water. Yeah,
right.
Well, you commented earlier about the importance of civil disobedience, civil resistance, and willingly being arrested. But one of the themes taken up, and when we were invited to follow the stories of Honor the Earth water protectors in Minnesota.
Yes.
And much of their story centered on their experiences in the courts and the criminal justice. It's very different from the experience of more privileged, typically non-Indigenous or white people.
Yes.
And how you form alliances that recognize that difference. And that is a theme in the film, is what does it mean to be an ally and to acknowledge Indigenous leadership and experience? And they're often described as the sacrifice zones in the climate crisis, having the worst and most immediate effects thrust on often reservations around the country or other lands that are the source of oil and other extractive industries that affect Native communities so severely. How does 350 around the country address this larger issue of being allies in struggles where, since Standing Rock, Indigenous communities have taken the lead? How do you think about that?
Well,
issue.
So 350.org is the national organization. They're a separate organization. 350 PDX is actually it's a separate organization. So I don't.
And there are 350s
all over the country.
All over the country.
We work together strategically, but we each sort of, you know, do the and we're all concerned with this issue, and I think and very much concerned with the question of what does it mean to be a good ally or a good accomplice, as people sometimes prefer.
The subversive term, to embrace it.
Yeah, especially I think if we're talking about civil disobedience and the point you raised, that's a very different experience if you come from a position of privilege and if you are not a Black or Brown or Indigenous person, your experience with that system will be very different and probably much less dangerous. And so, you know, the whole thing behind sort of the language of being an accomplice is that willingness to really not just stand by someone, but to actively be with them in breaking the law and holding some of that danger, because the system that we live in means that you do have some privilege and safety. And so I think for a lot of people in the movement, including me personally, you know, part of what I think about is I cannot escape that. So how do I use it? What do I do with it that is the best that I can do? So it's a big question, and I think also the question of leadership. I mean, Standing Rock really brought that to the attention of the whole country, but I think leadership from Indigenous communities has always been the case. We've just sometimes been bad at recognizing it. So that's not a new thing. I think we just need to get better at listening and integrating and paying attention and following that leadership.
And as Tara Hauska, an attorney and organizer with Honor the Earth in Minnesota, is featured in the film, as she speaks in one scene to the audience, she describes the beauty and purpose in struggle, that there's sorrow and it's very difficult and there's hardship, but there's also tremendous beauty in struggle. And
yes.
I like to think of the role of film and music and other aspects of the cultural side of resistance as providing some of the sense of beauty and without over romanticizing struggle either.
But it's tremendously important.
Yeah, and that it's an interesting life to be. To be a radical, and we were living in that, and thus in very interesting times.
It is part of, I mean, what I personally often say is like, this work, it's so, yes, it's difficult times, it's enormous problems, but this is my chance to be a real human being. What does that mean? And that's beautiful.
Yeah. So we can learn more tonight. And you want to say a little bit about the when and the where and the what of tonight, the event?
Sure. So tonight we are screening the film Necessity. And doors open at 6:30 at First Unitarian Church?
First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main in downtown Portland.
We're going to have a brief panel beforehand with the filmmakers and some local activists who've been taking different forms of direct action and doing a lot of other things. And then we'll see the film, and then we'll have a reception with music and raffle prizes
and food and drink
and good company and beauty, because that is important.
And Django Fields is a local band that will be performing. So
yes, bringing some of that good music.
Yeah, so it'll be a satisfying cultural experience, as well as hopefully events that will inspire people to get involved and to learn more about 350 PDX.
Yeah.
And to support the
yes,
support
your please
work.
Come out.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Anais.
Thank you, Jan.
Tipker, with the lead organizational
lead for organizational resilience.
That sounds like
it's a funny name.
A worthy role.
It basically means we're in it for a long time.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.